It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast, getting ready for a Tulane basketball preview. We've got a lot of great guests, of course, two great co-hosts, and myself, first, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, man?
What's going on, David?
Very happy to have you, dude, and I know you sound so excited to be with me, so maybe you're more excited to be with Bubba. Bubba, what's up, dude?
What's going on, guys? Big show, looking forward to it.
Yeah, hopefully we can keep you awake. I hope that I don't bore you enough that you start snoring. I feel like a minority now because I feel very alone because I'm the only one, ironically, that hasn't snored on the podcast. So
two out of three ain't bad.
Yeah, like Milo stuff. And it's coming to a podcast near you. I'll find one where I can get really, maybe I can take some Tylenol PM and I'll start snoring. And then that way we'll all be back on the same page. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, listen to the previous podcast and you'll know what I'm talking about. We do have a lot of talk to talk about. We've got a lot of great guests. Two great guests, as a matter of fact, don't we, Bubba?
Yeah, we do. We're going to catch up with the longtime play-by-play voice of the Tulane Green Wave, Todd Graffinini, better known as Graff. Always love talking to him, and so we'll talk about tonight's basketball matchup at Minji's, 7 o'clock on ESPNU, and then we'll also talk a little football with Graff.
I was just going to say, I think he's over the Saints, that really terrible call, but we'll find out. We'll have to ask him in that interview. We'll see if he's over that call and taking the advice of other fans who were not that close to a Super Bowl and got robbed of a Super Bowl. We'll see if he's still bitter.
Yeah, that's dangerous. Dangerous.
He's not over.
Yeah, that's dangerous territory. But we'll have to go there and see how he responds. But
you know, I'm always the gotcha, you know, person. I always ask tough questions, and so I'll see if I can flip that in.
But that second huge guest that you're referring to, he's a guy who he's a pirate. He played under Steve Logan, defensive lineman out of Bassett, Virginia, or Bassett High School in Virginia, I should say, and a tremendous defensive mind, and now a head coach of the BC Lions, Devon, better known as Biscuit Clay Brooks.
I'm so excited for him. Back in July, before the, as you guys know, before the nostalgia party, we were pre-recorded over 40 interviews, maybe 50. Bubba knows the exact number, I'm sure. And he was one of my favorites because he was so exciting, so engaging. And he told me that his dream was to be the head coach of the East Carolina Pirates. He wanted to be a head coach someday. Lo and behold, fast forward, that was July to December 12th. He went from being D.C., the defensive coordinator of the Grey Cup champion Calgary Stampeders, to now he's actually with the British Columbia, the BC Lions, and the head coach now, and just tickled for him because we're all Pirates, supporting Pirates, and he fired me up about the CFL even more than I ever have known in my life, and I watched some games of Calgary, and we'll talk to him, but if you're interested, and we need to follow and support all our Pirates that are in the CFL, there's a ton of them, right, guys?
Yeah, we thought about doing an interview, but, you know, interesting, as you'll find out when we get to that interview, Clay Brooks has just put Keith Stokes on his staff. So you got two Pirates there in B.C. to get behind. So this summer, when you're sitting around with your football, you know, jonesing for football, you can enjoy a little CFL. It's available on multiple platforms again. You can hear that during the interview, but it's pretty cool that he put Keith Stokes on his staff. And talk about other Pirates in the CFL, you got Emmanuel Davis and Stanley Bryant, and there's other guys. Bubba, are you familiar? Who else is playing up there right now?
Let's see. In addition to Stanley Bryant, Emmanuel Davis, I'm trying to recall. I know. Obviously no longer playing, but not in the too far past. You had Dakota Marshall, who we talked to. I know Dakota Marshall, he was up there, I believe, for that Grey Cup game, and I saw a picture of him on the sideline afterwards with Emmanuel Davis and some other Pirates that had played in the CFL.
Love to get him back. He's a great Pirate, and we loved him appreciate him.
Oh, I know one. I think Dominique Davis may. Maybe
he definitely will look at one time.
I think Dom Davis is still up there.
Y'all want to go ahead to that interview now since we're talking about it?
Yeah, let's go ahead. In fact, let's go to Devon Clay Brooks and let's talk to him. Let's go ahead and do that now. Very excited to have back on again. Now we can say the head coach and the CFL and the BC Lions and former ECU great Devon Clay Brooks. Devon, thank you, man. Appreciate you coming back on with us.
Like, you know, anytime. I love coming on with you guys.
Well, we were talking. It's funny, back in the summer, you were with us for, I know you're still the defensive coordinator at the time for the Calgary Stampeders. So I guess now I've got to switch teams to be a Lions fan, right?
Yeah, you know, you got to believe, instead of believing red and black now, you got to believe in orange and black.
I can do it. I'm really proud of you. We wanted to have you on for the very fact of being the new head coach. And I know that you told me when we were doing the interview for the nostalgia party, the football player reunion, you said that you wanted your dream job would be the head coach of the Pirates, and but you get a great opportunity to be a head coach in BC. I'm thrilled for you.
Yeah, I mean, that is the dream job. You know, once a Pirate, always a Pirate. The craziest thing is you talk a lot about, you know, your futures and your next step and your goals and where you want to be and that type of thing. And you can always call Greenville home, especially, you know, as being a Pirate and a football player there. It's no place like home, and you always want to end up going home. But I afford, and I'm very blessed and fortunate with the opportunity that Ted and Rick have gave me with the BC Lions to replace a legend that, you know, coached for 40-some years in his league, won 5 championships, and to be the next guy to run the program and to drive the car, so to speak, out there means a lot to me and for them guys, you know, Rick and David Braley, the owner of the team, to entrust me with the next phase and the next step. They went to the playoffs last year at 9-9, so now we're going to see if we can, do a little better.
I was going to ask you with that, I saw on YouTube it was a Canadian website today, looking back over things. When you were introduced as a new head coach, where did you get that BC jacket? That was, that's off the chain. I really loved it.
Hey, look, one of the perks of being a head coach, you just text me that size and I can shoot it right down to you.
Oh, my God, I definitely will. Oh, my God. It's like, if you guys get a chance and you're listening right now to this interview, you got to check out that jacket. It was amazing. But another amazing thing is I heard today on 94.3 The Game in Greenville, Patrick Johnson, one of our good friends of the podcast, he had on Keith Stokes, and Keith was talking about, I was really happy to hear the story, how you kept your word of being, when you became head coach, he was going to be on your staff.
It's so many quality guys that are former players that from even their high school level, college level, and pro level that are very qualified to be coaches and that can mentor young adults and youth into becoming, like I say, I like to take a young man and turn into a grown man. And I think that it's just so tough to get in. It's so tough to break through. And when you're able to get yourself into positions where you can afford to give young, hungry guys that are still trying to get their foot in the door the opportunity to showcase their talents, which you've known and you've seen on a personal level, then I'm blessed and fortunate to be able to do it. And by being the former roommates of the Rave, I mean, we've been talking about this for almost 20 years. So that's the craziest part about it is to, and I say this all the time to kids, like, you know, write your goals down on paper, write them, speak them and name them. Because if you speak it, you name it, you claim it, you know, you're going to get it. And a lot of kids don't understand and get that. And it can go all the way back to me saying I'm going to play in the NFL to Stokes and I in college saying, well, I'm a coach and you're going to coach. We should coach together to we both playing in the pros and the CFL together. And when I'm done, you done. Let's see if we can get our paths crossed to I'm up here coaching, you down in Philly coaching. So if things are lining up, I might can get a head job. If I get a head job, I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to bring you in, let you show what you can do. And then to it coming to fruition, it's just, you know, it's just the power of the tongue and power of belief.
Davon, tell our listeners out there that, you know, maybe aren't as familiar with the CFL, how they can keep up with the CFL and the BC Lions here in the States. You know, a lot of Pirates, with you being the head coach, Keith Stokes being on your staff, are going to want to follow BC this year. And what's the easiest way to do that here in the States?
Well, the best thing is that we signed a deal with ESPN. So yeah. especially during the summer months where there's no NFL football, like every one of our games are on ESPN2. Or and definitely on the ESPN app, and some of them are on ESPN1 too as well. But they carry all of our games, playoff games, including Grey Cup on ESPN on the ESPN app. And if not, then you can go to TSN.ca, and that's another site. It's a Canadian site, but it's the sister of ESPN. It's like the Canadian version of ESPN, and they carry all of our games in as well. And so it's a plethora of places you can go. And then most teams, or i.e. the BCLions.com, we'll stream our games on our Facebook page as well, as most teams do that here in this league. And it's a lot of Pirates in this league. I mean, Stanley Bryant was just named Offensive Lineman of the Year, second year in a row. He was, you know, Emmanuel Davis just won the championship with myself and in Calgary. So, I mean, ECU, I mean, we are out here in full strength. And yep. It's quite a few of us up here in the north trying to hold it down for us Pirates.
Yeah, Emmanuel Davis is having a hell of a career up there, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, we sought after him 2 years ago, and it didn't work. And then he signed back with Hamilton. And then last year, again, it's one of those things where we spoke it into existence, and it came to fruition. And it lined that he was able to come here last year, and everything worked out. And we won a great cup together. He led the team in picks, had a great year, did everything I asked him to do, came in to be a leader. I mean, he's a free agent coming up, so – it'll be interesting to see where he ends up in that type of aspect. But as far as everything else, I mean, you can't ask for a better player in that aspect. So you just see what happens. But great mentor to the young guys. I mean, I couldn't ask for a better player. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, and then the best part is like the conversations you have at practice before and after practice. You know, when you're talking about the burgers at Cubby's, or you're talking about the late night pizza, or you're talking about you're talking about the dollar beers and those type of things, penny drafts, and you're talking about all these things. It's just so cool to have people that can relate, even if they're from North Carolina and they didn't go to ECU. But just that area is just so much of a family-oriented and close-knit group that if you're just from that area, you feel like you know your brother anyway.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, specifically about Emmanuel, he was a guy that – when he was in East Carolina, I absolutely loved. And when he was here playing under Coach Hudson and Rick Smith, Rick was in that secondary. And then, coaching change came in, and he was played his last couple of years here under Brian Mitchell. And his production went down a little bit. And I always attributed that to the system he was playing in. But, man, when Rick Smith was coaching him here in the secondary, there was very few guys in the back end of the defense I liked watching better than Emmanuel Davis.
Like, he's a very instinctual player, and he puts his time in. He's one of those students of the game where it's like, Emmanuel, stop coming in at 5:45. I get here at 6, okay, buddy? Come here at 6. Like, you can't be beating the coach here. But he was just that hungry. Like, he took it as his job and as his career. And his goal was to get a Grey Cup championship ring, and that's why he took less money to come over and trust and believe in the system that was going to be able to – that employed that was able to put him in the green to be successful, and it was a cherry on top.
Yeah, you got to get him at BC. What are you going to have to do to get him over there?
Well, look at you trying to get me charged for tampering. Look at you over there trying to get me for tampering. I mean, but – every team, but in all honesty, what I can say is that every team will want a player of that caliber and with that aptitude and that football IQ and the things he brings to the field. I mean, every team would want a player of that caliber. So you see how free agency plays out and see what happens.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I understand I saw in the introductory thing when you announced hard to believe it's almost been 2 months, but I wanted to ask you about as far as free agency. I know you said in that interview or the introductory There's 300 free agents in the CFL. What are you going after to, and you said there's, I think, many different ways you can build a team. How are you going to build a team at BC?
I think, and I'm an old school believer of this, is that you can't throw the ball if you're on your back, and you can't throw the ball if you're on your back. Excuse me, that you start with the fronts, both O-line and D-line. You got to be able to check, no matter what you have, who you have at quarterback or what skill position, if we can't get the ball to them, it don't matter. Or a running back don't get a hold, it don't matter. So it starts at the front and it ends with the front, and my philosophy as a team. And I think that that's where you should always build your team from front to back, because if the secondary is having a great day, then you're shutting people down. But if the D-line is having a bad day, then it's a long, dang on day. And you can look at any game, even if you look at the playoff games in the NFL, the teams that dominated up front, the Patriots dominated Kansas City up front. Like Mahomes, they got four sacks on Mahomes, and they've been eating, and they've been eating ever since then. I mean, you don't even need to say anything about the Rams front when you got the MVP, obviously the defensive player of the year. You know, just setting up the whole front and four first rounders on that thing. So that's the whole montage of how I was groomed with the Dungies, the Grooms, the Bill Parcells, the Steve Logans. You think about those teams that we've had in East Carolina. We've always had a good front, and we've always had a good front. Like, we always had solid D linemen, we always had solid O linemen. At least two or three made all conference at those point in those heydays. And so I'm just of that fortitude, and I believe that that's the way it should be structured.
Devon, as far as the salaries, we had I know you know him, Trey Gallagher from the 78 team, and he had a brief stint in the CFL, so he always brags about you, and as he should, and all the guys in the CFL. As far as the salaries go, can you give us an idea for a player? We were discussing that last week. He was on down in the Senior Bowl, and we had a Senior Bowl special. Can you give us an idea of what the players make, or is there like a league minimum? Or
the CFL, the CFL average for per player is $85,000, but that's $85,000 Canadian, so it translates probably roughly about $72,000 American. But And then if you're starting in this league, if you're a starter in this league, you probably make between 90 and 100, give or take. Yeah. Because if you're starting, you're hitting your playtime bonus, and you're hitting, you know, you're hitting that 50+1 is what they call it. You play 51% of the plays, you get a bonus. So, like most players, put that in as one of the standard things. And if you hit those, but if you're an upper echelon player, if you look at it from this standpoint, there's only 41 teams that you can make six figures playing football until the AAF just came out. But until the AAF just came out, it was only 41 teams that you could make six figures playing football, and that's the 41 down south and then the nine up here. So that's your 41. But what you also have to factor in that a lot of people don't understand or know is that the CFL has a 4.5-hour rule, because back in the days when the kids didn't make any money playing in the Canadian Football League, they had second jobs. So it's in the CBA and the bargaining agreement that you can only keep the kids for 4.5 hours a day. So, technically speaking, you're only up here for 6 months a year, so you're really getting 3 months of 8-hour work out of these kids. So, if you factor it in and you look at it from that equation, they're making a pretty solid, decent living.
Yeah.
And they're getting to play their dream.
How do you figure, you mentioned the AAF, how do you figure that the AAF and the return of the XFL is going to affect the Canadian Football League in terms of players from, you know,
you gotta look at it from the grand scheme of things. Is, you know, if you got 120 some Division I teams, each team graduates around 20 players on average, some up to 30 per class. If you're looking at that, that's 25 athletes a year. There's only 256 that are drafted in the 7 rounds. They sign roughly another 300 free agents.
Yep.
So that's just 500 out of 19,000, and the other 19,000 can play somewhere, especially if they're in the Power 5 conferences or upper echelon football or one of the elite conference athletes in those divisions. So you factor, there's always enough players out there. It's just that you got to have the talent scout and the time to go through it to find them. you know, it might be a guy that you can see that fits your skill set that played for A&T and only started three games because of he didn't get along with the coach. So it's like it's one of those where you have to really do your due diligence, because if scouting wasn't an exact science, then everybody would go undefeated, right? So it's really not an exact science, so you have to deal with it accordingly from that aspect. But as far as those leagues, I don't think will affect us as much. It'll hurt you to get guys up there, but you'll still have your choice of talent and choice of guys. I mean, and even our rosters and stuff are limited as well. So, I mean, those guys got to play somewhere too. So you think about it, we only have 22, 23 Americans on our team on your active roster. So, and that's with nine teams, that's 200 people. So it's 200 Americans out of the 19,000 that we just talked about. And that isn't calculated over year, over year, over year, as those numbers grow, guys are trying to get on or to get in or to get a shot or play an arena and trying to get on to get noticed and trying to build their way back up. So you really have a plethora of unmined talent. It's just that who's going to put in the work and the grind to figure it out and to find it.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned about having 22 players on each roster from the state. How many guys are on the Canadian Football League roster, and what percentage of them have to be from Canada?
You have a 46-man roster. You'll play with out of those 46, you play with 44. And then out of those 44, 21 Canadians, 20 Americans, and then your three quarterbacks don't count.
Okay.
And that gives you your 44.
Now, most of the Canadians play their college football in America, correct? I mean, there is college.
Well, the Canadian college system. It's came a long way since, I mean, I've been a person since 07. And you've seen it evolve and grow to where predominantly your high draft picks were from U.S. schools, because the football caliber and standard is higher than it is here. I mean, if you're an athlete, typically you're 15 to 16, you're picking up a puck instead of some pads. And it's just also weather preference as well, because it gets, you know, your seasons are limited here. You can always find a hockey rink or a basketball court. So you're competing with the availability of the sport. And so a lot of kids, but nowadays you're getting a huge influx of Canadian kids. Like even in the NFL, the Saints drafted Yamada. He was from a Canadian school, a D lineman. The Saints drafted him. You got Brent Urbane from the Ravens, who just got paid. You got the doctor from Kansas City, Tardif. You know, they want to put doctor in his name. He's a Canadian. So you have some key players. Some Canadian influx of their football that were all homegrown in Canada that are playing in the NFL and playing on Sundays. And that was just to name a few of the guys that I was just thinking of offhand that have that talent. So the talent pool is getting a lot better. But, of course, if you're a Canadian kid and you play in high school and you got a chance to go down south, you go to a prep school or you go somewhere else to try to get that big ride, because that entails flips it and puts you potentially in the first and second round of the Canadian draft anyway.
Coach, we were talking about as a matter of fact, last week about the AAF. We also talked about the defunct USFL from back in the day, and there was a lot of great teams and talent and about how they moved their schedule. Donald Trump was the owner of the team, New Jersey, New York Generals. He tries to compete against the NFL. He went to $1 lawsuit, and USFL in the 80s goes bye-bye. As far as the CFL, I've always liked it because of the weather situation in Canada. You have to play it more to refresh our memory as far as the actual season, as far as preseason and the actual schedule for the league.
Well, it's crazy because our season starts at the end of May, and then it runs until American Thanksgiving is usually Grey Cup weekend. So, and Canada does have their own Thanksgiving too, just to catch up the Americans that will be listening to this. And theirs is typically in October. I remember the first time that I seen somebody fry a turkey in October, I was like, what is going on here? but American Thanksgiving, and that's why you say American, because American Thanksgiving is, it's Canadian Independence Day is usually your first weekend of the season, which is the first weekend of June, July, and like because Canadian Independence Day is July 1st. So instead of July 4th as American, Canada's independence is July 1st. So typically that's usually the kickoff of the weekend. You play two preseason games. You play 18 regular season games. You get two divisions. One division has five teams. One division has four. Your top two, your top three go, you play in, but we do have something that's called a crossover, and that means if the fourth-place team in the opposite division has a better record than the third-place team in the other division, they take their spot in the playoffs.
Okay, wow. Yeah, we're learning more. In fact, because of you, I promise you I would have paid more attention. I did watch your game for the Grey Cup where you won, and that was really sweet. In fact, ESPN Plus and you were talking about the ESPN app. I was able to watch it that way. I was actually at work.
I was fortunate enough to coach a great group of guys defensively. We ended up with six turnovers in there, and should have had a few more, but those guys played lights out, and they did a great job. I mean, they were able to control the offense that gave up, that scored seven touchdowns a week before. And so with them able to come off and able to do that, just testament to those kids.
I remember when you were here back to your playing days at East Carolina, you having the nickname Biscuit. And I think I remember the story of how you got that nickname. I think I do. But why don't you tell everybody how you got the nickname Biscuit? That way I don't tell it wrong.
Well, because I'm fat and my grandmother loves to cook, and she makes these sweet southern biscuits, and you put honey on them. And every day after school, and I'm from Virginia, so that's the southern, So you play sports so you don't have to go to church. You're going to church every day for something. Deacon being Bible study, choir practice, something, right? So you play sports to get out of it. But every time I would get home, my grandmother would have a hot plate of biscuits there, and I put honey on them things, and woo-wee with that buttermilk. And she said, "You eat so many biscuits, I'm going to call you Biscuit." And then when we went to East Carolina, so that happened like my junior year of high school. And then when we went to East Carolina, they asked, "Do you have any nicknames?" And I'm like, "No," but my roommate's like, "Yeah, his grandmother called him Biscuit when they dropped him off because he got a biscuit head." So then they started, that was a running joke because my head is abnormally large. And so they really did. So then that's how the biscuit take over. And then now I'm called Chef Biscuit because I'll be putting it down in the kitchen.
Gotcha. Are you bringing some of the southern dishes up north and introducing them to the Canadians?
Oh, so I used to do we used to have a poker tournament every year that I was in Calgary. And one of the prize packs on the silent auction was a southern barbecue dinner with biscuit. And I would do like barbecue ribs, barbecue chicken, macaroni and cheese, cornbread, collard greens, and I would cook all this. And they was like, "I don't know what this is, but it's just so good."
Maybe you should start your franchise of restaurants up there, my friend. That would be a new delicacy for the Canadians.
It's a few barbecue joints that opened up here that trying to do it. trying to bring up that taste of the southern to it. It's missing a few key ingredients though. So, but when in Rome, do as the Romans, I guess.
Yeah, I wanted to get your take before we. I wanted to ask you about the with the coaching change with Scotty Montgomery now with a new head coach, Mike Houston. I wanted to ask your thoughts on him being a former player, and obviously you're a tremendous coach yourself, and. You have a new gig. He has a new gig. What do you think about our new skipper, if you will, for the Pirates?
I think we got a coach. I think we got a, Scotty played too. So like a lot of that always comes. Everybody always says, a former player. Like I've been around coaches that are former players that are so far removed or wasn't a guy in the locker room. So, therefore, they really had their own little one or two people that they messed with in the locker room. So, they had their own little small group. So, the guys that are being the greatest coaches are the guys that didn't have a set group or set friends. And I think that we have a guy like that. We have a coach that can relate to the player, understand the days through an athlete, their challenges and their trials and tribulations. And he's done it he's also done it from a lower level, that which is harder in your books because you don't have, i.e., the greatest facilities, or you don't have this or things like that, or even the financial backing of your scout or of your finance, of your alumni and things like that. And he was able to make that program into a success. So I think if we give him time, I think he'll definitely lead us to where we need to go.
What do you think about Coach Shankwiler coming back?
I love it. Coach Shank is one of my greatest coaches. He's a mentor, a friend, a straight shooter as a coach. And the best part is when you get coaches that can coach for as long as he is and he has, and to stay relevant, because, you know, the game changes, evolve, and the players, because I tell you what, these millennials are on a whole nother level on their own. So I can't imagine recruiting one at 14. So you think, to think about it, for him to be able to stay relevant in this game when it's a young man's game, and you see every year they go younger and younger. If you look at the NFL, you know, the Rams coach is 32. You get the influx of the new coaches that they hired, all offensive-minded young coaches. So you look at the way the league is trying to shift, but then you look at a guy like Wade Phillips is still relevant, still one of the best D coordinators in the league, and still able to do it at a high level. So it's one of those where it's a testament to those old heads that are able to still stay relevant and still stay relevant in the game.
Yeah, I'll tell you something interesting I noticed about Coach Shank. When he wasn't here, when he right before he did the 1 year stint at NC State this past year, he was on Pirate Radio and he was talking about his last year coaching at FIU and how technology is changing everything. And he was talking about embracing, which kind of surprised me a little bit about Shank, embracing technology and utilizing smartphones to your advantage. You know, he said he was at a high school in Georgia, and he heard the, you know, principal, you know, say, telling the, you know, talking about the students not being allowed to have their cell phones, you know, in class. And he thought it was so stupid. Why not, you know, teach them to utilize them rather than telling them not to have them, because it's just going to tempt them to use them even more. And I just kind of thought how smart that was, that you know, Shank, being an old vet, but, you know, embracing, you know, technology, which is such a huge part of millennials, you know.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, even with us, we even have iPads for all of our guys where they can watch a game film. The best part is we can see who logs in and who logs out and how long they log in. So it's also tracking on it. But
You
also, they're able to use film. We have these text apps where you can send a group text to the only D lineman or the only linebacker to the whole defense or the whole team, where it's Coach Claybrook says this and this and this. Meetings are changed, or if you're on the road and you're traveling and you're like, oh, we moved up meetings, we moved meeting rooms, you're able to stay in constant contact, because no matter what, these millennials, they always have that phone attached to the hip.
Devon, I had a question, or actually a couple questions for you. The first was going back to your high school days when you were coming out of Bassett High School. If I'm not mistaken, you were a running back, correct? So you talk about your transition to defensive line. I know a few years later, I guess about a decade later, actually, C.J. Wilson was a running back coming out of high school, and he became a defensive lineman for the Pirates.
Oh, yeah. So I wanted to play every other – like I had a great amount of scholarships. I'm not really sure offhand, but a large amount. But they all wanted me to play like defense, like – Virginia Tech, they all wanted to play defense. But Coach Logan and Coach Jag, who recruited me, they were going to let me play tight end. So I was like, you know, offense scores the touchdowns against the girls. Every girl wants the offense. So that I never forget it. The first day of camp, it was the main camp, like the vets just got there. Marcus Turner was the quarterback, and we was in a two tight end set, and – they threw a seam route to me, and one of the Hart twins KO'd me. And I told Coach Logan, if you don't move me to defense, I'm transferring. I did not want to play defense anymore, offense anymore. I think it was Darren. I think Darren KO'd me, come across on that seam, and Marcus hung me out to dry. I talk junk to him every time I see him because he used to live up here in Canada, right? So every time I see him, I was like, he tells me, he's like, you need to tell me thank you for hanging you out to dry, because who knows where you would end up if you stayed on the offensive side of the ball.
Next time we have him on, we had him on recently. He's actually back here, literally 12 miles from me. We're both Morgan County boys, so I know he's back here, and we had him on. He was tremendous. Next time we have him on, we'll definitely mention that.
Oh yeah, 100%. But he turned out to be one of my good friends and a great leader. And he was one of those old heads that took that group, that class of those guys. They, when they really said family, they took you under their wing as family. And you come in and you're just a young country boy from Pasadena, Virginia, and they took you under your wings and showed you how it was done and showed you the power of the way. And then you felt that it was necessary or required to pay it forward. And that's how we were able to establish a tradition. And I find that those are some of the things and core values that need to be brought back and they need to be reestablished.
I want to let you know the spring game, by the way, you probably won't be able to get here, but if you can pass the word for us, we want to get as many former players back. Coach Houston wants the former players to be a huge part of this program at East Carolina. The spring game is actually Saturday, April 13th. So if you can tell the former players that can make it, we'd love to have them in Greenville. It's kind of like my personal mission now. I want to get as many former players as we can at that game.
Well, I guess to see now, I guess I got to see if I can change the schedule around and move it around. Give me a long weekend that weekend. See if Ben Stokes can come down there.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
My other question.
Bobby, you had another question.
Yeah. My other question was obviously Sunday we had the Super Bowl coming up. So reflecting back, I think it was Super Bowl 37 when you were with the Tampa Bay Bucks and you had the opportunity to win a ring. Was that against the Raiders out in San Diego? Is that correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So talk a little bit about that experience and just not only the game itself, but just all the hoopla and everything surrounding the game, and you had the opportunity to take part in multiple bowl games while you were at ECU, obviously much bigger stage, but just talk about the events and the media day and everything going on at the Super Bowl.
It was one of those things where it's like you're stuck between a rock and a hard place because you're playing in the Super Bowl. So in your mind, you're like, I'm playing in the Super Bowl. And you want to embrace it and enjoy it, but you're also playing the Super Bowl, and those opportunities don't come around that often. So you want to make sure you put forth your best foot, and you want to make sure you did everything to help your team win. So it's one of those, do you embrace the week and enjoy it, or do you treat the week like it's a work week and it's a business week and it's a business trip? Luckily, I was with a veteran-laden group, and they've been playing that because they all – like it's potentially five Hall of Famers on that defense that I was on, whether you know Rondae, Sapp, Sim, Brooks, and Lynch. They're pretty good five names, and two of them are already in the Hall of Fame already. And so when you're playing with a level group of those guys, they kept it professional and they held the whole group accountable. It's kind of tough for you not to be there at seven if the guy's making $13-14 million in front of you, that seven watching family and breaking it down in the Super Bowl week and not being out late night and those type of things. But, like, the media day was like a circus because you get college media, you get high school, and it's even crazier now because with so many more media and the digital media outlets, now anybody can become a reporter and now anybody can report news, whether they're blogging it on a podcast or there's just so many outlets nowadays that the media has swelled. So you don't have that many beat writers and beat reporters, but for every one beat writer or beat reporter you lose, you got five people in podcasts, six people that are blogging, or you know, and that so on and so forth. So you end up dealing with it from that aspect as well. So it's even crazier now. And you also you got to remember in 2002 and 2003, that back in those days, there wasn't no Twitter and there wasn't no. So the media dynamic and structure is just totally crazy now.
Do you have a good John Gruden story you can share with us?
Gruden tells us the first day Super Bowl week, Gruden says there's one play that we have to stop. No matter what, he's like, Gannon will check to it at any point in the field, any time. So Gruden runs our walkthrough scout team. He's a scout team quarterback. As you know, he played a quarterback at Dayton or whatever. And so he ran our scout team, and he was like, this play, if we can remember the play, and here's the check call of it. So we're like, well, why is he giving us a check call? Because, of course, they're going to change their check. And Gruden's like, I'm telling you, they're probably not going to change their check. So I'm like, yeah, right. What happens in a game? They don't change their check. All five of our turnovers in the Super Bowl came off that play. The two on the comeback that Dwight Smith picked off, the two on the post route that Dexter Jackson picked off, and then the drag route that the tight end drag route that Brooks picked off from the tight end. All five of our turnovers came off that play. And the craziest part is we had the most trouble stopping it during the week. Like, Gruden is like, do you not hear the play? And like he would complete it. He was like, you're not here to play. He completed. Like, he would check to it out in like 12 plays. The team, I think, he checked to it four times and had four completions. But, my God, I guess he roasted us way more in the week than we did get roasted on Sunday because we were able to get the five turnovers off that play.
Well, that's awesome. Do you have a Super Bowl? We're actually going to drop this podcast Thursday, a couple of days for the Super Bowl. Do you have a prediction on, do you think it's going to be Mr. Tom Brady again, or do you think the Rams are going to get it done?
I'm lacking confidence in the Rams secondary holding up to allow the front four to get there. So Brady got a quick release and get that thing out of there. So I mean, and they've seen a lot of football. But I'm going with the upset. I'm taking the Rams. Actually, I'm taking the Rams by three.
Wow.
A lot of people are taking the Patriots. And everything, and you understand and you see why they got there and play the Chiefs, they stopped the Chiefs juggernaut. But again, like I said, if you look at this game, it's going to be one in the trenches. The reason that they won against Kansas City, they dominated up front. Like Mahomes still had a decent amount of yardage, but he couldn't get comfortable back there because he was always getting off the spot. And the key to it is as any coach knows, that you want to move the quarterback off the spot because the 5 yard out. If I make him break out to the left and the 5 yard out to the right, that 15 yard throw turns into a 22 yard throw if I just have him roll 5 yards to the left. So now that's more time for me to react and more time for me to play off the ball. So like the sacks are not the important point. The point of it is who, what D line is going to get that quarterback off the spot. And if you base it on that, I haven't seen a front five that stopped that front four of the Rams all year. So. But you're also dealing with the guru of Belichick, but you're also dealing with the guru of Wade Phillips. So it's a great, interesting battle of the minds and a great chess game because the most rewarding part is the coordinator and the reason that you get the same butterflies as a player and the same twitches in your eye and the same glitches is because it's a chess game with me across the line of scrimmage from this guy across there. He has a speculation of what I'm doing, have a speculation of what he's doing, but who can win and say, get checkmate? And that's the key.
It's going to be an interesting game. And I know that it may be, I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I think you're right. I think it's going to be a tight game. And I like your prediction. I think there's been a fatigue. And sorry, Patriot fans, but I've never seen the Los Angeles Rams. They've never won a Super Bowl. So it'd be nice to see the LA Rams. St. Louis has won, but LA has not. And it'd be nice to see them win one.
Oh, 100%.
Well, appreciate you, man. I know that you've spent a lot of time with us, and good luck, Coach. We're very proud of you. I was so excited the day I heard. It was almost like I got the job. I was like, oh, my God, it came true for him. I was so proud of you and so happy for you because I know you've been wanting it for a long time and well-deserved, and good luck this coming season. We promise all three of us will be watching games, and we're now Lions fans for BC.
100%. And let me make sure you text me those sizes so I can get you some gear out of there.
We definitely will.
All right, guys.
Good luck, Coach. Have a good night.
Appreciate it.
All right, bye-bye. Bye-bye.
What a great guy, you know. And I hope that if we get, I tell you what, we need to get those jackets. He promised the jackets that what we'll do is we'll get the jackets and we'll take a picture and we'll put it on our Facebook page and Twitter and Instagram. What do you think, guys? I mean, that BC jacket, you got to see it. It was really cool. I was like, that guy is, he's got major, he definitely needs to be in GQ magazine talking about Devon Claybrooks. It was really cool. You have to check it out.
Yeah, but, you know, I was sitting here thinking about that. I kind of feel like a jackass if I actually texted him our sizes and addresses. I mean, it's one of those things that people offer, and it's a great gesture, Would you kind of feel like a jackass if you actually followed through with it and texted it to him?
We'll see. Well, maybe we'll keep have him on the podcast, and maybe down the line we can, it'll be more appropriate to ask him or not. That's only the second time.
It's kind of like Chris Tucker. I'm trying to remember if it was Money Talks or Rush Hour. Remember he said, I'm just messing with you. He said, you don't really have to send it. He said, unless you're going to send it.
Money Talks. That's a very underrated movie. Him and Charlie Sheen. I love that movie.
I had to check that out. I hadn't seen that movie.
What they want is adult pride. We don't do drugs in this family.
And that tub wasn't clean, you nasty, blankety-blank white boy.
Exactly.
All right, moving right along. I want to get your guys, we had an interesting podcast, one of our most listened to podcasts ever, our previous one, that we released on Wednesday, about the case of the missing 40 under 40. Well, I think they found it, and it's back on the website for ECU, for the Alumni Association, and looks like things are going to go on as planned. So we'll find out more guys about that, but I wanted to update folks. If you listen to the previous podcast and you're wondering, we're hearing it's back on, definitely back on the website. So what do you guys know?
Well, according to the press release that was released by ECU about 5 o'clock today, it was never canceled. It was just, they were just considering moving the date. I call BS because, why did the gentleman resign? Because they were going to move the date. I don't think so. Staten is trying to cover his ass, CYA, cover your ass, and he's trying to take the heat off of him. And nothing to see here, folks, nothing to see here. And, guys, don't let this go. Pirate Nation, I'm telling you, don't let this go. Keep on it, because the man,
he
does not have East Carolina's best interest in mind.
Hey, Dave, and Dave,
I was going to tell you a great movie reference. The soundtrack, I love Beverly Hills Cop, Axel Foley, Mr. Eddie Murphy, the soundtrack. Exactly. Axel F is a great instrumental. Harold Faltermeyer, thank you very much. And I absolutely love that soundtrack, and I love The Heat Is On. Let's keep the heat on, Cecil. And Cecil, the heat is on.
Heat is on.
It's on the streets. The Starland Forums, it's on 5th Street, it's on 10th Street, it's at every stadium in East Carolina. The heat is on, and it's cold outside right now, but I promise you, the heat is on.
Indeed it is, and look, people can say what they want about us if we're being negative. You know, I think the majority of Pirate Nation agrees with us. In fact, I don't think, I know. But there are those that will try to say we're being anti-ECU. Look, we're not being anti-ECU. We love East Carolina University. That's why we won't see Cecil Staten out of power, because we know he is not what's best for ECU. Anybody who says we're anti-Pirates because we're speaking out against Cecil Staten, you're out of your minds. Cecil Staten is the wrong leader for our university. Our great university, and he needs to go. And in time, he will be gone. But how much time is it going to take? And this whole situation is just ridiculous. It's another thing that shouldn't have been an issue that he made an issue. Because
that's the whole point, exactly. Yeah. That's the whole thing. You know, you guys know about sports. As an official, being a referee, you never want to make it about you. You want to be where people don't know your name. If they know your name, then you're probably a terrible official. Not always. Sometimes they're good officials. Same thing with East Carolina. The reason why we know about Leo Jenkins is because the man was a visionary. The man, actually, we would have been UNC at Greenville if it was not for that guy. He made East Carolina University. Look at the med school. You could go on and on. He's the guy that went to Alabama who brings in Pat Dye. And he goes to Alabama and gets Bear Bryant to say, who should we have as our next coach? I mean, you could go on and on of all the successes around the university. Okay, that's an example of someone that did great things, and you know the name of that chancellor. For the last, please tell me, please people help me, that are Cecil fans, the Cecil Mafia, please tell me what has been done that's been so great here. Since July of 2016, we're approaching July this year, will be 3 years.
Oh, they'll spin it. They'll spin it, Dave. The Cecil Mafia will spin it and mention him bringing in Dave Hart and bringing in John Gilbert and us hiring Mike Houston. But bottom line is, we had to beg, plead, bitch, scream, holler, threaten, fly banners, throw frames, boycott, quit going to games, pull money, threaten to pull more money, start podcasts, cry, crap on the floor, every damn thing else to make those things happen. Staten didn't want it to happen. He extended Comfer. He backed Montgomery. Everybody raising immortal hell. We'd still be sitting here twiddling our thumbs with nothing positive happening. So all this thing happened. Dave Hart, John Gilbert, Mike Houston, you know who you can credit for that. You can credit Pirate Nation for that.
And Joe Dooley. Most
Joe
of all
Dooley.
People.
Yeah, Dooley, sure.
But sure, nobody, credit, I mean, who's against Joe Dooley, you know?
Nobody. But my point is, the positive things, you can credit Pirate Nation for that. Us screaming and hollering and using all those other adjectives. I mean, it took all that to make those things happen, because you know, quite frankly, Staten doesn't care about athletics, doesn't get athletics, particularly at the Division I level, and so I don't. What's he done positive for the university? Nothing. I mean, not a thing. Enrollment's down. And every time you hear him in an interview, he makes excuses and he deflects and he blames others. Now it's Scotty
Lunatic
Montgomery.
Fringe.
You know, if you go back and listen to an interview he did back in the fall where he talked about the reasons for enrollment being down, it was because all were targeting more poor kids from Eastern North Carolina because they needed more poor students or some crap. I don't know. And football didn't have anything to do with it. Now in the Daily Reflector, he said football. It was Scotty Montgomery's fault for the reason enrollment was down.
That's actually a true statement.
Yeah.
Everybody can say all they want to. Academics and athletics.
Nonetheless, the chancellor shouldn't say that. What the chancellor should say about enrollment being down is, yeah, enrollment's down. It was disappointing. I got to look what I can do.
Right.
As the leader of this university, leader. Get enrollment back up. You don't blame others. You don't make excuses. A leader accepts blame and
the top praise.
Yeah, you deflect. You when you succeed, it's everybody else's. Everybody else. If you're the leader, when you're successful, my associate chancellors, my AD, the students, the alumni, they're the ones that cause us to succeed. When you fail, it's on me. I got this. That's what a leader does. And he does the opposite. Hell, he attacked the fans and the alumni on numerous occasions.
Yeah, which is amazing. I mean, that's like a CEO attacking of a company, attacking your customers. I mean, think about
it. Him along with Karen Shanahan, those two clowns, have attacked their fan base, their alumni, their donors. It's just ridiculous. But anyway, to the 40 under 40, it's just par for the course. She's staying. Glad is back on.
Guess what? I can tell you what happened. There was so much heat. The bottom line was with this whole thing, the case of the missing, I was kind of like the people's court. I was joking with Bubba. He said, let's run with the title, the case of the missing 40 under 40.
Would you be Doug Llewellyn or Judge Waltman?
Yeah, I know you've been sworn in. I have read your complaints as the late great Joe.
Doug Llewellyn. Let everybody hear that, Doug Llewellyn.
Yeah. But,
I was referring the other day when we were speaking off the air.
Doug Llewellyn impersonation?
Yes.
Put him on the spot.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
God, Damani Bubba. Jesus, you did put me on the spot. I tried to remember what I was saying. What did I say?
You don't. You don't take the law in your own hands.
Oh yeah, thank you. You don't take the law into your own hands. You take them to court.
And he actually, he was on Pirate Radio with Troy, with Troy Dreyfus, and he actually is making his residency now. He lives in the Asheville area, the western part of the state. So very cool. We love. I'm a huge fan of the People's Court, the '80s People's Court, not ever whatever it is now. I don't really care. Don't have time to watch it anyway, but. I love the People's Court, so I had to make that reference. But, hey, we've got a basketball game tonight, guys. Let's talk about that. We had a chance to reach out to Tulane's play-by-play voice in town, Todd Graffanini. Let's find out more from him about the game, about the Saints, and so much more. Let's go to the interview now. Well, we're looking at a big game coming up tomorrow night. Actually, it'll be tonight as we have the Green Wave of Tulane coming to town from New Orleans and taking on the East Pirates, and one of our favorite guests back with us, play-by-play voice of the Tulane Green Wave, one of our favorites, is Todd Graffanini. Todd, thank you so much. Appreciate you, Graff, coming back on.
Gentlemen, good to be on with you.
Well, I wanted to ask you, it's been a tough little road for both Tulane and with the Pirates. Pirates haven't won since, hard to believe, that big upset against Cincinnati, and it's been a tough road to hoe. Of course, we're used to struggling in the conference, especially in American, and I know Tulane's had a tough time so far.
Yeah, we got you beat. We haven't won since before Christmas, so it's been quite a long time since Tulane has tasted victory. Yeah, it's been a very tough stretch, and they'll kind of start it out okay, actually. Won two of our first three games and had a tournament in Florida and beat South Dakota State, who actually is an NC2A team the last couple of years with a NBA prospect, and they scored 84 points on them. And again, you know, maybe we're going to have an okay season. So it's tough to lose two pro guys. You know, Melvin Frazier and Cam Reynolds went to play professionally after Cam graduated and Melvin left a year early. He actually got drafted by the Orlando Magic in the second round. So it was tough to replace those two guys, but early on in the season, it looked like we were going to be able to kind of figure out a way. But unfortunately, it's really turned with injuries and youth and a whole lot of other factors. So yeah, it's really been a rough go of it this year.
As far as Coach Dunleavy Senior, Mike Dunleavy, I think he's done a nice job. How is he handling the team? I know that last year he looked like he was turning the corner, and it's been a tough road here, like we were just talking about. How is he handling this? Because I know that he's a very successful coach.
Yeah, no, it's been tough on him. You know, they're still staying the course, though. And I will say this, despite the record and despite the losing streak and just everything that's going on with this team this year, the coaches are really grinding each and every day. The players are playing hard. There's just not enough to compete night in and night out in this league. And that's what we've seen so far. Now, I will say this, played very, very well against SMU the other night. And at the under four media timeout, it was a one possession game in Dallas. So they're making strides. But it's just really, really thin right now as far as the roster goes. We're very thin and very young, and that's not a very good combination when you're playing in the American night in and night out.
Graff, you alluded to Melvin Frazier and the talent that was on this team a year ago. Enlighten Pirate fans whom they need to keep an eye on tomorrow night in a game that will be televised on ESPNU at 7 p.m.
Well, Caleb Daniels is definitely the guy that's played the best from beginning to where we are right now. And he's a sophomore, and he's a local kid from New Orleans, and he's averaging 15 points a game, which is number one on the team. The problem with Caleb, and it's not really a problem, it's just something that he's been, you know, thrust into, is he is playing a position where he wasn't recruited to play. And he's playing the point guard right now, because we really don't have a true point guard. Rayona Embo has not played 1 minute this season, and he has been really good for us the last couple of years, but he has been plagued by patellar tendonitis in his right knee, and he has just not played. And we've got guys that are playing point that are not point guards. And if you look at our turnover numbers, they're staggering. And it is really, really, well, I mean, for lack of a better word, guys, it's killed us this year. The off and live ball turnovers have just buried Tulane. And if you look at the turnover numbers and points off turnovers, they're statistics that we just cannot overcome. And Caleb has actually done a pretty good job in the last couple of weeks playing point guard, but he's really not a point guard. He's an off guard guy who wants to shoot threes and kind of penetrate and kick. So he's doing as well, a good a job as he can right now. It's just, again, we got a lot of guys that are out of position just because of the injury situation that we've had. And so one thing that I did not discuss, we've lost two of our big guys, these Sudanese kids, seven-footers, who were really starting to come on midway through the season, but both those guys are out now. So we're down to eight players, and we're down to two big men. Blake Paul, who's really played well, actually, the last four games, and Samir Shayich. If those two guys get in foul trouble, we are in deep trouble because there's just nobody to back them up. So it's kid, you got to laugh. If you don't laugh, you're going to cry right now if you're Tulane. But, again, the last – you know, two out of the last three games, we've really played hard despite the lack of numbers, and we've hung in there. It's just, again, when you're playing the teams in our league where you got to be really on point night in and night out, it's just really tough right now.
Graf, I wanted to mention, too, as far as Coach Dewey, and he's come in, and it's been a little bit of a struggle this month. We knew it was going to be tough, but some of the games that we – I think he's killing us, let slip away. What are your thoughts for the folks at Tulane, the coaching staff, about Coach Dewey and his staff?
Well, he's doing a fine job, and all I can tell you is if you got a guy like Gardner, I mean, my heavens. I mean, you look at the numbers, and I was kind of, you know, perusing on the plane and looking at the notes, and I watched the game the other night against USF, who, by the way, is having a pretty solid year. We've already played those guys, and boy, has Brian Gregory turned that thing around in Tampa. But I mean, Gardner is an absolute beast, and just to see some of the numbers, how many, what, 30 point double doubles has he had, and playing against UCF to go, what, 35 and 20? I mean, that's ridiculous. Yeah. As a true freshman. So look, there's obviously talent. Coach Julie's bringing it in. I know Williams can really shoot the three. And Spaza Yevich starting to come on a little bit. And so I know it's a long process for you guys as well. So it's going to be an interesting game. And I was talking to RSID, you know, before we got on the plane today. I said, you know, I'm actually really looking forward to the game tomorrow night just because of the way we played in Dallas on Saturday, gave ourselves a chance to win. You know, I'm going to give you a stat, and I hope you guys are sitting down because it was really unbelievable. But before the game in Dallas last Saturday, we had played five conference games, actually six conference games, and we had had a lead. The first conference game of the year was January 2nd against Cincinnati. We led Cincinnati. Shaquan Barrett hit a three-pointer, hit a bailout, shot clock beating three, 1 minute into the game, and we led 3-2. We did not have a lead. One lead until 2-0 against SMU. We went six full games without even leading 2-0. So that's how rough it's been at Tulane. Now, again, we had many leads against SMU, so there was a start. There was a start and gave ourselves a chance to win. But, yeah, that's how tough it's been this year at Tulane University.
Sounds like North Carolina football under Scotty Montgomery.
Well, I don't want to bring up a miserable thing, but
you're going to do it, aren't you? You're just going to do it. You're going to do it.
I don't want you to hang up on me or hang up on.
I tell you what, don't tempt fate. I know what you're going to do.
Well, Roger Goodell.
Go ahead. Ask. I'm ready. Yeah. Go ahead.
I knew we were going to interview and heard earlier today the ridiculous, not really a big fan of the commissioner anyway, but I was going to get your take on the call. Obviously, I know you're a big Saints guy and a big New Orleans guy. Are you guys ever going to forgive the NFL for that terrible call?
No, never. I was in the dome, and, you know, I wasn't very close. I was sitting in the terrace across the way. I was in section 515, six rows up, and you know, and I'm that far away. And as soon as that happened, I'm yelling my head off. What's go? You know, throw the flag. So I wasn't 15 feet away, with two guys staring right at it and missing it. And look, I know it's been talked about constantly the last week and a half. In New Orleans, you got to get over it. And the Saints fans, you got to get over it. How dare you people? And I'm not talking to you. I'm just talking in general. How dare you people tell me what to get over? That was a joke. And I don't want to hear, yeah, you blew a 13-0 lead. You blew a 20-10 lead. You know, by the way, the Rams are pretty good too. And it's a football game. It's an ebb and flow of a football game. And the Rams made some plays that they had to do. The bottom line is this. It was 20-20 after all was said and done. The Saints drove the length of the field to put themselves in position to win the football game. And as soon as Ted Ginn caught that ball and the two-minute warning hit, I turned to the guy who was sitting next to me and I said, if we get a first down, this game is over. Because the ball is on the 13-yard line, and the first down is at 3. We get a first down, they don't have enough timeouts, we're gonna kick a field goal and we're going to win the game. And that is exactly what would have happened if the call would have been made. So I don't want to hear what happened before. I don't want to hear, hey, you know, you got the coin flipping overtime. I don't want to hear any of that crap, because none of that would have happened. None of that would have happened if the call would have been made. So it's a joke. The NFL is a joke. People are boycotting the Super Bowl. I am not going to watch it. I will not watch one down of it on Sunday, because it is a tainted Super Bowl. The Rams should not be in the ball game. And anybody who is objective enough and knows the game of football will agree with me. And if you don't agree with me, well, you can stick it. And that's the truth.
This has been Todd Graffiniti on Mad Dog.
Hey, I didn't curse.
Yeah. No, you didn't. Hey, that call was terrible. And I want to get your thoughts before we let you go, too. I know you're waiting for our buddy Clip Rock, and give him our best. Clip is the best. So I wanted to ask you about that very thing of the overtime. I absolutely despise it. Even as a kid, I hate that overtime rule in the NFL. I can't stand it. And please, somebody change that rule about sudden death. They try to tweak it a little bit. I don't want to get your thoughts. You're more professional than I am, but I hate that overtime rule in the NFL.
Well, I mean, I guess it is what it is. And look, I know we got the coin toss, and I know Breeze threw a flick. By the way, Breeze got clocked in the head on that interception, but we're not going to talk about that either. I don't know what – I mean, you don't like it because you like the college rule? You want them to start at the 25?
I don't think you like
– I don't know where you're going.
The sudden death.
I don't like that. Well, I mean, the sudden death thing is not great. I like college, but I just don't like the sudden death thing.
So you're talking about first. If you're talking about getting the coin toss and going down and scoring a touchdown, then it's over.
Correct.
You think that both teams should get the football?
I do, but I mean, I know it's sudden death, and I know that rules are rules and all that. I've just never liked it. I feel like if you make it to overtime and you don't win the coin toss, then you pretty much have a chance.
Unless you're the Rams and you hit the quarterback in the head and the quarterback throws a pick and then you get the ball and you go and kick a 57-yard field goal. And by the way, I will say this: Greg Zuerlein kicked two of the most clutch field goals you'll ever see in the NFL, and I tip my cap to him because he did make a 47-yard field goal to tie the game up at the end of regulation. By the way, he never should have been able to kick it, and the overtime kick as well, which, by the way, he never should have been able to kick it. But, again, what do I know? I'm not bitter, guys.
Yeah, Graf, we can't let you go out like that. We want you leaving with positive thoughts and vibes about the Sports Objective podcast. So my question is this. Tell us about the Cure Bowl and having the opportunity for the Green Wave to get that 41-24 victory over an in-state foe like the Louisiana Raging Cajuns.
Great question. It was awesome. It really was. Excuse me. And it was much needed for our fan base and to play an in-state rival,
yeah.
You know, just 2 hours apart on I-10. It was great. And look, if you think about it, guys, we were 2-5. We had just lost to SMU at home, a game we had circled on the calendar from the end of last year. 2-5 and going, what in the world is going on? And for the first time in the Willie Fritz era, I was sensing pushback from our fans. And we turned it around. And specifically, Justin McMillan, who was the transfer from LSU, who literally came to campus a week before school started, was put in at quarterback, and just he knew how to run the offense, which was amazing in itself. And the guys rallied around him, and you know, we just went on a roll. And for it to come down to the last game against Navy, we had to make a 2-point conversion with 20 seconds left in the game to win the game. It was a phenomenal way just to get in the bowl and to go to Orlando and to perform like we did. And look, the score was 41-24, but trust me, guys, it was not that close. It was a complete domination of ULL, and it was an outstanding way to end the season. And our fans, who are, you know, I'd say starved, famished for winners for winning football at Tulane, it was just a great way to end the year. So, great question to end it. Great question.
I got one more before we end it. What's that offense going to look like next year? Fritz changing his offense.
Well, that's going to be the $20,000 question. You know, Will Hall is come in, and you know, we're going to see what happens in the spring. And a lot of our fans were so excited to see Willie Fritz make a change, in the sense that, you know, a lot of people thought that our offensive coordinator at the time had just not untapped the offense the way it could have been. So I think what got fans excited was that Coach Fritz was not resting on his laurels saying, hey, we made a bowl, you know, everything's good. To the contrary, he thinks that things can get better offensively. And look, McMillan is an incredible talent. He's got height, he's got speed, and he can throw it through a brick wall. And we saw some of that down the stretch. We didn't know he could run until he really got an opportunity to do it. And he can throw the ball. You know, he's got to get a little more accurate, but that's going to come with time. And he didn't have a spring with us. He literally started practice a week before the season started and practiced about a month, and then he was starting. So he is going to have what we hope is going to be a very productive spring. We've got pretty much every skill position guy coming back this year, with the addition of a wide receiver. Actually, our DB's coach, J.J. McCleskey, who played for the New Orleans Saints, his son transferred as a grad transfer from Oklahoma State and is going to come in and play wide receiver immediately. And he had a very productive senior season. So we're going to put him in into the lineup immediately, and just to go on top of everybody else we got coming back. So offensively, I'm really, really fired up what's going to happen this year at Tulane.
Well, Greg, we'll wrap it up here, because I know Cliff is probably into two or three beers by now waiting on Dana Murphy. So tell him and see if he can get some answers for I know you had trivia.
I told him, look, he was telling me to come. And I said, you know what, Cliff, I hate sports right now. I really don't want to answer any trivia questions, because I am just bitter, bitter, bitter with Saints and now Anthony Davis bailing. And it's just New Orleans sports right now I cannot remember a rougher 10 days. I mean, it's just been absolutely brutal. So I'm just going to sit. I'm going to sulk. I'm going to pout. And I'm going to listen to everybody, you know, answer their trivia questions. And I'm going to sit on the side and have adult beverages, and that's pretty much what I'm going to do.
Have the Reuben. They got a great Reuben in it.
They do, no doubt. But, well, thank you very much, Graf. Appreciate it, and we definitely look forward to the game and look forward to enjoy obviously the voice of Jeff Charles and yourself, both of you, two of the best in the country, and calling the game, the same game tomorrow night. So we'll have to switch back and forth. Thanks, man. Appreciate you very much, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
I really appreciate you guys having me on. Thanks a lot.
Well, do you think that he's still a fan of the podcast? Do you think he'll come back on? Did I make him mad? Did I piss him off enough? He's not going to come back on?
Nah, he was expecting it. He, you could tell he was waiting for that. He's very, very entertaining fellow, very animated. Play-by-play voice there for the Green Wave, but I actually think he missed his calling. He should be hosting a midday sports radio show on a Mad Dog type format, it sounds like to me.
Yeah, that was an excellent interview with Graf. Always fun catching up with him. And something else we need to talk about, guys, was this is something that had been rumored out there for several days. Our good friend Stephen Igo at hoistthecolors.net had reported it, and we had done our research prior to that, and we knew William & Mary was one of the teams on that small list that was likely going to get that slot on September 21st, and today it became official. The Pirates and the Tribe will square off on September 21st this year in Dowdy Ficklin Stadium.
It's a shame it had to be another FCS team, but it is what it is. It's not anyone's fault at East Carolina. John Gilbert did the best he could, I'm sure, to try to secure an FBS opponent. It just didn't work out on such short notice. So you get William & Mary in here. I don't know how well they travel. I have no idea of them being a private school, what kind of fan base they have, if they'll bring many fans with them. You would hope they would, sell some tickets. But it kind of is what it is, and hopefully what it'll be is a W. Maybe the NCAA will grant us that waiver where we can count two FCS opponents on bowl eligibility. We'll see about that, but I don't know. I mean, what do you say about it? Mike London being their head coach, after having success at Richmond and then, going to Virginia and not having success, and I guess being successful at Howard, two successful stints at FCS. Now he gets another FCS job, moving back up the FCS ranks from Howard to back to the Colonial where he was in Richmond. And so that's a good storyline, I guess, Mike London being the head coach. But beyond that, I don't know. What do you guys think? Ain't much to say about it.
Yeah. Out of the options, if it had to be an FCS opponent, I think this was probably the best one because William & Mary does have a strong football tradition, a very rich history under Lou Holtz, and then Jimmy Laycock was there for what, about 40 years or something?
Yeah.
So I remember Jimmy Laycock. I think he had
won the last name.
Yeah, Jimmy Laycock. He was taking the I think it was the Boston College job. He accepted the job. He accepted that job. Excuse me, and then had second thoughts and decided to remain in Williamsburg.
I remember that. I remember him talking about that. I don't know what happened, but I do remember him talking about that when he retired. I heard him do a long form interview about his career when he was retiring. I don't remember where, though, but anyway, I remember him talking about that.
Go ahead, Kyle, I'm sorry.
I know, go ahead.
I was just saying, speaking of coaching moves, it's nice to see another member of Scotty Montgomery's former staff at ECU land on his feet, and that is Shannon Moore. He served in multiple capacities, both as the special teams coordinator the first part of his tenure, and then I guess strictly as the tight ends coach and recruiting coordinator this past year. But Shannon Moore landed on his feet at Wyoming. He'll be coaching the Cowboys tight ends and fullbacks. And I was kind of connecting the dots there. Of course, the head coach at Wyoming is former North Dakota State coach. I guess it's Craig Bull. Shannon Moore had been an assistant with South Dakota State, I think, the Jackrabbits. So they had that NDSU, SDSU connection going on there. So that's I'm sure how that kind of got started and squared away. But good for Shannon. And something else of note, former
ECU offensive coordinator, current Oklahoma head coach Lincoln Riley got a nice raise, and now he is
like $3 million raise, right?
Yeah, something like that. $6 million per year now, and then also Coach Ruff will be making $575,000.
I have another thing to mention too, by the way. It was announced today as well that thanks to our good buddy Stephen Hill, that they're thanks to the University of Maryland, because being that Coach Montgomery is the offensive coordinator, we don't have to pay him any money for the buyout anymore.
Yeah, that's great. Good for you, Maryland. Appreciate it.
All right, for Bubba Rosenbaum and obviously Kyle from the Grange, want to thank our great friends, obviously Todd Graffiti from the play-by-play voice of Tulane, and the head coach of BC Lions for the CFL, and former ECU great Devon Claybrooks. I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.